This chant this morning, I am the heir to my karma, born in my karma, related to my karma, abide supported by my karma, whatever I shall do, for good or for ill of that, I shall be the heir. You notice we chant that a lot. So that's based on intention, right? And that's not just about past lives. Because when we're meditating, we're always making choices, aren't we? When I choose to look at the breath or observe the heart, whatever I choose to do, behind those choices there are intentions. Some of my choices I don't notice, just notice I'm thinking about something I haven't really noticed and connected. But when I am awake and I make choices, if the intentions behind those choices are from greed or aversion, in other words, I'm trying to get rid of something or become something, then that's going to be my inheritance at the end of the hour. I am the heir to my karma, so I'm the heir to the way I make those choices. So if I make the choices from ignorance or not understanding, from maybe some kind of judgment that I have to get rid of something, or I'm trying to attain an experience I had before, then that will give an unpeaceful result, because it'll be coming from desire to become or desire to get rid of. So it's very important to establish as much as possible an attitude of it's in the Pali, it's phrased in these negative ways of non-becoming, non-aversion, not getting rid of. So the language I keep saying is just, this is the way it is now. Receptive, aware. Another bit of language I like is ease of being. Just start with that. And then make a choice. Make the choice to just listen. Make the choice to feel the breath. But try to keep making those choices for a more kind of experimenting attitude rather than from becoming something or getting rid of something. Then there's a possibility of understanding. If I already think that I have to get something that I don't have now, then that very attitude of trying to get something in the future prevents me from understanding, because I haven't accepted the way things are now. So acceptance is a big part of understanding. Just accepting the way things are now. I have a friend who has a hard time, is very, very judgmental about her inner architecture. Is that the language we use? The kind of stuff she experiences. And so she's had to develop skillful language to allow things to be the way they are. So I can't quite, she had really some lovely phrases, but she just developed language like, I completely accept and allow any kind of mood or emotion or formation to be present, right? And that for her brings up an attitude where she is aware of the way things are. So she counters her tendency to be very judgmental and critical and unaccepting with language that brings up the opposite. And that's very skillful. It's something she just figured out herself, because she saw the problem in her own mind in that way. So consider that, like when you make effort, or when you hear the inner voices of your own mind, are they ones of acceptance and then working with the way things are, or are they voices, I have to get something, have to get rid of something, I shouldn't be this way? What are those voices like? And then from those, recognizing what's skillful, what's unskillful, and then trying to create language and attitudes which are helping you to balance yourself. If you can do that, then you're really understanding yourself, and you're understanding how to develop your own particular path. And this would be part of right effort. In the Noble Eightfold Path, the fourth noble truth is the Noble Eightfold Path. That begins with right understanding, and then that leads to right thought, and that leads to right effort. So right understanding is first of all, it has to be the willingness to observe the way things are. Then if I see how it works, then my thinking processes will be encouraging attitudes according to that right understanding. So if I'm a person who typically is very kind of goal-oriented and I have to achieve something, and I notice that suffering, and then I put in the language, it's okay. Like Ajahn Sumedho used to give us the earthworm discourse. In their first year and second year at Wat Nana Chat, we were young. We were. So these sort of, again, like all these monks are sort of, they're either abbots or date or disrobe, but a lot of these monks are now abbots of monasteries. And we were all young and very, very gung-ho, right? Really trying hard and fiercely competitive and goal-oriented and all the good things of Western culture. And poor Ajahn Sumedho said, just take it easy. Just be an earthworm. Just kind of wiggle along in the ground, aerate the ground, that's good enough. Just be an earthworm, just be more patient. Or he'd say, if you can just be a little bit kinder this lifetime, that would be nice. So that was addressing a certain attitude which existed amongst all of us. It was rather universal. But then when I heard, say, Ajahn Chah, the way he would sometimes speak, and he would be addressing the larger community of Thai monks, he would say, torture yourself. Torture your defilements. He used this word, toraman. Toraman means torture. So he'd say, torture your defilements. And I said, okay, I like that. It's fierce, it's ascetic. But what he was addressing was a kind of very laid-back Thai attitude. She'll be right. Yeah, it's all right. We'll meditate tomorrow and watch the mangoes grow. So for he was addressing a certain type of mind which was rather indolent. So I'd say, like, push yourself. Don't just give up so easy. But when I picked that up, I interpreted for my own kind of attitudes to life, and I just was too fierce, much, much, much too fierce. And then I'd hear the earthworm talk. I said, wait a minute, what's that about? So obviously, even though the language is like right understanding, right thought, right effort, it's right for me. In the sense it has to be right for my character, my conditioning, my attitudes, and how it works for me. So in the case of this woman, how she developed this lovely language, which I thought was very skillful. She really saw how her mind worked, how it got trapped. Then she just brought in this lovely language to create right effort, because she understood. So she had right understanding, she had right thought, and then from that she had right effort. And she had to keep doing it, because the old habits of wrong effort and wrong understanding kept coming up. But she had a language which then brought her home. Kind of brought her home to the place of, oh, this is the way it is now. And I like that idea, just coming home. Ease of being, nowhere to go, nothing to do. And then from that, then sure, focus. Try some practice around the heart or focus on the breath. But try to keep in mind the whole thing of non-becoming. Yeah? Look at that attitude. So what should we do? I'd like to, now let's do some more breath. I'd like to kind of, if you could see how breath is a wonderful way of getting in touch with the body, just like deep, I really like that, just doing some deep breathing, it kind of gets me in the body, you find that. Again, I'm saying like long breath in, long breath out. Don't be too forceful. If you find it too forceful, then don't worry about it. But see if you can get to a sense of breathing, which is really like the body likes. It likes a good deep breath. It likes to stretch. It likes to do yoga stretches, but not in some kind of, you know, rigid fashion. And then I'll just sort of walk through parts of the body and suggest a way of like the whole body breathing, going into the head and going into the shoulders and bringing the breath in there. Let's try that, okay? So what I'm trying to encourage is more body awareness, basically. And then from the body awareness, one can understand the moods of the mind and so on and so forth. So let's try that.